From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 64 of Little Brother for December 11th, 2021. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started! If you are a user of Verizon's wireless service, you should probably check your privacy settings. Under a new program called Verizon Customer Experience, they are likely collecting a great deal of data about you. The ostensible purpose of this data collection is to personalize their communications with you to make better product recommendations, etc. You've heard all of this before. In short, they want to figure out how to better sell you stuff. The best part is that you don't need to grant them access, they've already opted you in. Isn't that convenient? Fortunately, it's very easy to fix. Log into your Verizon Wireless account, go to Privacy Settings, and turn off all the things. I'm not a Verizon Wireless customer, but I do use their home internet service, so just on a whim, I logged into my Verizon Fios account and found that there is a similar setting there. Log in, go to Manage Your Internet. To manage online advertising preferences, in the pop-up you'll find a box labeled Do Not Participate. Put a check in the box and hit the Save button. However, unlike the wireless situation, this has no visibility into your individual devices, only into your network traffic. Related to all of this, Ars Technica is reporting that Verizon may enroll you in these programs regardless of what you have elected prior. As such, it may be worth setting a reminder to check your privacy status at regular intervals. I'm adding it to my weekly maintenance checklist starting immediately. Staying on the topic of cell phone privacy, The Verge is reporting that game designer Jane McGonigal sent her Google Pixel 5a in for repairs only to have her private photos and other data on her phone leaked. Google's official repair instructions say to back up your device and wipe it before sending it in for repairs, but isn't that rather like the IT department requiring that you send them an email to open a ticket because your email isn't working? Seriously, if, say, your touchscreen is broken, how would you back it up and wipe it? But wait, there's more. Mitto AG is a company based in Zug, Switzerland, which handles text message notifications and has established the ability to get messages to cell phones even in parts of the world that have been difficult for Western companies to reach. Its customers include Twitter, numerous Meta and Microsoft properties, Telegram, TikTok. No real issues here, they're providing a valuable service. So what's the problem? Well, according to a report by the Bureau of Investigative Journalism and Bloomberg News, the company's founder and chief operating officer, Ilya Gorlik, has been selling access to Mitto's data to secretly locate people via their phones. This was not shared with the company's clients, and the offering was only known to a handful of the company's employees. Have we talked enough about cell phone privacy yet in this episode? No, I don't think we have. In May, Apple added an ability to iOS for users to request somewhat across the board that applications do not track their activities for advertising purposes. According to a report from the Financial Times, certain applications have used creative interpretation of Apple's rules and requirements in order to follow the letter of the agreement without actually following the spirit. Of course, at the heart of the problem here is the requirement that the applications themselves need to honor the agreement, and if they do not, it's on Apple to enforce it. As cell phone sales are driven by availability of apps, Apple may tread lightly here, but in the meantime, do understand that apps that have tracked you before probably still are. Life360, a family safety app which parents use to track the activities of their children on their mobile devices, has been selling the data they collect. No honor amongst thieves, I guess. Well, here's an app that's used to spy, and it's spying on you. Who'da thunk? Back in episode 57, I mentioned that Roku and YouTube have been at an impasse and that the YouTube app would no longer be available for new Roku devices. As of this week, they have settled the impasse and things are back to normal. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. You know what that music means. It's time for another episode of Who Got Pwned This Week? The big pwn of this week is the Ministry of Health in Brazil. An astounding 50 terabytes of data were exfiltrated with a laser focus on COVID-related material. The COVID notification system, known as eSUS Notifica, the National Immunization Program, Connect eSUS, an app for visualizing your medical history, and national vaccination data. This is also impacting the ability to issue COVID-19 vaccination certificates and the national vaccination card. Individual states that maintain a local vaccine database were not impacted by this hack. It is worth noting that an attacker was able to get into the system as far back as February and leave a note, a fact that was captured in a tweet from February 17th. It is also worth noting that Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro is opposed to vaccination, masks, and pretty much anything that might control the spread of the virus, leaving open the question of whether or not this was incompetence, neglect, or sabotage. In a time of increased connectedness, we are ironically dependent on a smaller and smaller number of companies that provide us with our connections to the internet. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, approximately 86% of U.S. households have broadband subscriptions that they rely on, not just for web surfing, but also for television, phone service, and even telework during the pandemic. At the other end of the wire, businesses, small and large, rely on having consistent internet service in order to conduct business. Larger corporations can afford the costs of having special lines put in to provide redundant connections from multiple providers and to reroute those connections when customer-provider relationships go sour. Small businesses and nonprofits, however, have no such option except to deal with the provider that is already serving their area. Here in Schenectady, we are incredibly lucky to have two competing internet service providers, but most of the country is not so lucky. Fongaboo is one of the founders and an engineer at a small nonprofit hosting provider called the Helix Foundation. He's been an employee of Spectrum, the one and only internet provider in his area, for well over a decade, and recently left this job for greener pastures. One of the perks of the job had been free internet service, but obviously that comes to an end. Complicating the issue, the plan was for his post-employment internet connection to be business-class service, with the goal of building a small data center in his home and relocating the Helix Foundation servers there from the rented data center space that they currently occupy. I spoke with Fongaboo earlier this week about the issues that he encountered. All right, I'm here today with Fong of the Helix Foundation. Fong, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So could you tell me a little bit about what the Helix Foundation is, what it's about?
I think when we started this, we knew, even down the line, even though we didn't know the unknown unknowns, that once corporations and the government got kind of a better understanding of the internet, they were going to start doing weird things, and it was going to be best to kind of have your own little bunker somewhere, you know, rather than running off of someone else's architecture. And we just have this, you know, idea of like, hey, we like doing it ourselves. And plus, since it's just collective and a nonprofit, we offer free hosting to friends, family, community organizations,
yours truly,
things like that. Yeah. this podcast lives on there. We're happy to host it. Recently, I decided to get back into the IT business and left Spectrum to go do that for another company. When I was working for them, they offered employees free or low-cost internet, depending on, you know, which speed package you wanted to get. So once I ended my run as a employee at Spectrum, I said, hey, maybe this will be a good opportunity to try to sign on and get business class broadband to my home, specifically with static IPs, with, you know, and what's funny is that's the one thing you could not get if you were an employee. Basically, what we had to do, we had to close my account, which was still attached to my previous employee account, I had to close that completely and wait a full month before signing up and creating a new account in order to be considered a new customer and get the introductory rate on business class. So that was a month where we had to rough it, running off of all these different combinations of T-Mobile hotspots and just the hotspot on my phone or an old phone that I had suction cup to a window in the kitchen, and then a Wi-Fi repeater that would bring it to my wired LAN.
So these are the things you're forced to resort to due to a lack of competition in wired internet service in your area, as in
most
areas.
Oh, yeah, that's an important thing to note, is that, you know, years ago, Verizon Fios started rolling things mm-hmm. out, but they went to the suburbs first. I mm-hmm. guess that was their most lucrative place, and then after a certain point, they kind of just stopped the bulldozers short and decided not to come into the main urban areas, where I am. So Spectrum, AKA Charter Communications, is our only option here. So the after putting ourselves through that self-imposed hell, the idea was to get a brand new account, get a business class account, and also get a decent introductory rate as a new customer for that. The reason I didn't just go for a consumer account is we were looking at the possibility of moving Helix's foundation bare metal server out of the colocation facility and putting it in a rack in my basement. And so, yeah, I was looking to get the Spectrum business class to get that rare static IP and IPv4 space to host a server on.
So all should be well, right? You'd think so, wouldn't you? After all, this is what a business class connection is supposed to be able to do. It's the sort of connection that you're supposed to have if you're going to be running a business or a nonprofit over your internet connection, especially if you're going to be providing services. It's supposed to come with additional uptime guarantees called a service level agreement, a privilege for which you pay a premium. However, it seems that things were not quite that clear cut. So that brings me to the next question, which is, what went wrong?
Well, you think our lives were going to be back to normal once we get this nice Spectrum business class connection run in here, that we're going to conceivably have business level gear. We're going to have business level uptime or what have you. And ironically, after years and years and years of just having, it was an employee account, but nonetheless a consumer connection using consumer level modems and stuff mm-hmm. like that, what do you know, the first month into using Spectrum Business Class was made me want to rip my teeth out, because we were having, I'd say, 3 to 4 dropouts a day of 4 to 6 minutes each. That's
what it was. If this was something that had already been deployed into production, that would be a showstopper. That would be, well, it's unacceptable as it is, but that's insane. You've obviously worked with them a fair bit, or at least tried to work with them a fair bit to try to get the service sorted out.
Yeah.
That brings us to whether or not you worked with the Public Service Commission at all, or maybe did you work with the city as one of the holders in the franchise agreement or anything like that?
Yeah. Well, that, when you mentioned the franchise agreement part of it, that's, I don't know the nuts and bolts of it as it stands now. But one thing I can tell you from when I was an employee is that if we went back 15 years, it was still regarded as an important priority every 5 years to make sure that we had stayed in the graces of the franchisee, i.e. the municipalities that would sign with us in a 5-year interval, that they were going to renew. And like my boss would have me do specific projects that were kind of like, hey, like, look what we've done for you, you know, for certain municipalities that we were up for re-sign. But with all the merging and, you know, coagulating, and now there's probably, what, you probably can't even count the ISPs in the U.S. on 2 hands. They're too big to fail, too big to not use. So they don't care about that franchise agreement anymore. So I don't even think, I could be wrong here, I don't even think that there's an avenue to go through your municipality to make complaints and, you know, have the municipality involved.
Okay.
So
at this point, you drew out the big guns, and who did you contact next?
Yeah, I mean, we were getting into our 3rd or 4th service call, and the problem just, like, still was going on. And I was not really happy with how they were approaching it. Well, I made them take it seriously, but to describe how, to the extent they weren't taking it seriously, when we got to like our 2nd or 3rd trouble call, and often with the phone calls with the reps and stuff, they would start pulling out like, well, I'm seeing spikes where you're like, you know, maxing out your bandwidth and blah, 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 and just like pointing to these graphs and things.
Yes, but aren't you paying for that bandwidth?
Yeah, you know, like they would point these graphs in my face, like they were rubbing my, like I was a dog, they were rubbing my nose in it or something, like not coming out and saying it, but like insinuating, like, stop all the downloading, it's your fault, you know. They wouldn't say that, and I'm just like, well, what do you want me to say about that spike? I'm paying
well,
for
it's not like an internet connection snaps under load or something like that.
Yeah. And they initially said that there was problems at the pole, and then they came back and they said they resolved it, and it didn't resolve anything for me. So then I saw a post on Reddit about somebody who had similar problems with Comcast, and they said that they were getting a runaround just like me, like, you know, what are you doing? You're doing something wrong, or, you know, it's your equipment, you know, especially if you're someone like me. I mean, even before I had business class, I have my own router. I have my own managed switches in the house. There's a lot of self-run gear in my household. So
sounds familiar.
They love to point at that stuff conveniently to say, oh, here's a point of fault that has nothing to do with us. So, but, you know, so, but somebody who was having that same experience with Comcast, they said everything changed when they filed a complaint with the FCC, with the Federal Communications Commission.
Okay, so you filed a complaint, and what happened?
Yeah, similar to what this person described, it was almost like things went 180, and all of a sudden, this was a serious thing to deal with, getting direct calls from, I don't know, foremen or network managers, you know, folks on the food chain you'd never be able to really find your way to directly if you're just calling up and hitting touch-tone keys or navigating the voice activation menus. So I guess the moral of the story here is you can actually get behind the green curtain if you're having frustrating problems like this with your broadband service if you go the FCC route. To be fair, once we were already onto our fourth service call once the response for the FCC complaint came back, and I'd say logistically, they finally did whatever they needed to do to get things technically working, and they got me a solid connection that's not dropping anymore. But at that point, I've already pulled my hair out. I'm aggravated. I've lost a month of build out time. Yeah. And more importantly, show me the money. That's when we're at the point where we're starting to talk to billing about how do you compensate me for the last month.
I asked Fong how that went.
They are so stingy. They will look at the cumulative outages from all the reports that you call in, and then they will prorate whatever your monthly rate was based on the total amount of time you were out. I feel that, like, hey, it doesn't matter, like if the internet was working during the hours I didn't want to use it, it didn't work when I needed it. So
right.
I don't want $20 for the 7 hours cumulative. That's not 7 hours I couldn't use the internet. That was a full month that I couldn't build my server. But the reason I was glad that I put the FCC complaint in nonetheless, even though it came to pass so late in the technical part of the game, is that when I got to talk to that foreman or network manager, even if at that point that conversation was opening when we were right at the point of actually solving the problem, that was still an opportunity to say, hey, I talked to billing. They're only offering me this. I feel like you guys failed to do proper installation. Mm-hmm. I should get my $99 installation fee back. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been able to do what I wanted to do with this business class connection for months. So I should get my first month back. And I got to give him credit. The guy pulled some strings with billing and got me, about 200 something back.
Brilliant.
Combination of my installation fee and my first month. So, that's a point that even if you're way into it and you think it's going to be fixed technically, still make the FCC complaint because you can get something monetarily. It's leverage, even if that's monetary leverage after the fact. So
good to know.
I would say not to hesitate.
Fong went on to explain how you go about making an FCC complaint.
The website to do that, it's very intuitive compared to you and I are ham radio operators, and we've probably gone into other areas of FCC.gov sure. that are not that intuitive or user-friendly.
There is so much truth to that.
But the place you want to go is consumercomplaints.fcc.gov, and it's a nice, straightforward, well-designed website, and you just put in all of your information. They give you a nice big dialogue for you to tell the whole story in multiple paragraphs. And
consumer complaints is a single word, or is it hyphenated? Or
yeah, single word, consumercomplaints.fcc.gov. And when you submit to that, the company in question, your ISP, receives this complaint, and somebody high up on the chain has to respond to you directly. And there are further processes beyond that if you're unsatisfied or if they don't get back to you. Luckily, I can't tell you about that because they did do their due diligence once
beautiful.
Once Uncle Sam got on their back. Yeah.
Beautiful. All right. Well, Fongaboo, thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care now. Fongaboo is one of the founders and engineers at the Helix Foundation, the nonprofit which hosts this podcast, amongst many other websites. He spoke with me earlier this week. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks also go to Fongaboo, Azrael, Thriller at Play, and Knight Rider 007 for bringing stories to my attention. Additional special thanks to Fongaboo for appearing on this episode. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. And our theme music is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email, critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Thank you.